Welcome to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in today for Marty Moscawain. Imagine being a private well owner living in a small town in Pennsylvania in the heart of fracking country, knowing that drilling companies wouldn't have to inform you of a toxic spill which could affect your drinking water, or that doctors concerned about chemicals used by the industry are unable to talk about health concerns because of a gag order approved by state lawmakers and signed by then-Governor Corbett. These were two provisions of Act 13, Pennsylvania's oil and gas law, struck down as unconstitutional by the state Supreme Court because they violate the state's Green Amendment to the Constitution. It guarantees the right to clean air and water. Pennsylvania is one of only two states which have green amendments. Montana is the other one. And today's guest is leading an effort to see that green amendments are enacted across the country and even at the federal level. Maya Van Rossum is the Delaware Riverkeeper and author of The Green Amendment, Securing Our Right to a Healthy Environment. And she's here with us today in studio for Radio Times. Welcome back, Maya.
Thanks so much for having me.
And as always, the call-in number is 888-477-9499. You can send us an email to radiotimes at whyy.org or tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. So, Maya, for those of us who aren't familiar with the role of Delaware Riverkeeper, just give us a brief refresher. What is it that you do?
So, in my role as being the Delaware Riverkeeper, it's my job to make sure that the voice of the Delaware River is heard in all of those rooms where decisions are being made that would impact the main stem river and all the tributaries that feed it. Of course, that's not the job of one person. That really is the job of a community. Protecting any natural resource is. So I have an organization called the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, which works throughout the four states of the Delaware River watershed, New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, Delaware, and at the federal level. And we primarily engage in advocacy and litigation and scientific research and restoration, all focused on giving our river a voice and protecting its current health and restoring lost health, again, to the main stem and all the tributaries that feed it.
And you are an attorney as well.
I am an attorney as well, yes, a licensed attorney in three states.
So, Maya, define a little more fully for us the concept of the Green Amendment. I had no idea Pennsylvania was one of only two states with a Green Amendment. And why you believe we need to see this concept enshrined in state constitutions, and even again at the federal level.
So a Green Amendment is a constitutional provision that's placed in the Bill of Rights section of our state or federal constitutions that recognize and protect the right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment as an inalienable right, and protects those rights in the same way we protect and honor the other fundamental freedoms we hold dear, like the right to free speech, freedom of religion, and private property rights. I think that green amendments are really essential, particularly in this day and age, as we can see that even though our environmental protection laws, when they were passed and when they were implemented, whether you're talking about laws at the local level, the state level, or the federal level, while they did accomplish reducing pollution, reducing environmental degradation, they created jobs and supported economic development and protected communities from droughts, floods, and wildfires, fundamentally, our system of environmental protection laws here in the United States of America are not really focused on preventing pollution or preventing environmental degradation. They're focused on managing it, managing how, when, and where it will happen.
I don't think that's the perception most of us have.
And that's really part of the problem, right, is people really believe that we've got this wonderful set of environmental protection laws and that it's illegal to pollute and it's illegal to fill in a stream or fill in a wetlands. But that actually is not the case. It's not illegal to do any of those things. You just have to go to the right government agency and get a permit. And frankly, getting a permit is not all that difficult if you just jump through the hoops. And so what we see is across the nation, we have individuals and communities that are suffering from environmental degradation. Their health is suffering. Their property values are suffering. The quality of their lives are suffering.
So let's get a little bit more back to the story of Act 13, Pennsylvania fracking, and the Green Amendment, which was in place for decades, by the way. But Act 13 is enacted, and again, there were some provisions in Act 13 which were I imagine very difficult for local communities to handle. You talk about the fact that 10 years ago you traveled to Columbia Country County, I should say, in central Pennsylvania to visit a cabin on some family land. And in talking to a neighbor, you found enormous pressure being brought to bear by drillers to lease area land. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so my mother had, with money left to her actually by her parents, had bought a piece of property in central Pennsylvania and enjoyed it as a natural forest. We went camping there and really enjoyed the lovely nature. After she passed is when fracking came on the scene in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania. And in central Pennsylvania, across western Pennsylvania, you know, really the pressure for fracking really amped up very quickly in the mid-2000s and overwhelmed communities. For my mother's property, the fracking pressure was in the nearby areas. And what ended up happening was fracking began to happen, and the level of truck traffic for every well that gets fracked, you're talking on the order of 1,400 to 2,200 truck trips just to service that well. So that's amongst the many other devastating effects of fracking. Truck traffic is one of them. And for my mother's property, the traffic really overwhelmed the property with the jay breaking and the sounds. And ultimately, the ability to enjoy that property really got ruined in that way by the fracking industry.
But on further investigation, you found that there were these provisions. For instance, we talked about the medical gag rule and also just the fact that the drilling agency in a large way was able to seize land through eminent domain, which is supposed to be for the public in general, for the public good.
Yeah.
So tell us just a little bit about that and then the process to discovering that you could use the Green Amendment to try to work to have these provisions overturned.
So at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network, we have been fighting against fracking ever since it came to the region. And in fact, up until this day, you do not have drilling and fracking within the boundaries of the Delaware River watershed, largely because of the work of my organization. We are fighting now to keep that protection permanent and in place, and that is an ongoing struggle. But of course, in other parts of Pennsylvania, outside of the watershed, we had not had success. The Delaware Riverkeeper Network working with our partner organizations and communities across Pennsylvania. And despite all of the environmental protection laws in place at the local, state, and federal level, it was really pretty easy for the fracking industry to overwhelm Pennsylvania communities with their industrial operations and their 24/7 noise, light, and pollution and traffic, really devastating, contaminating drinking water supplies and streams and groundwater and air. But despite the fact that it was so easy for the industry to overwhelm, they wanted it to be even easier. And so they wrote for themselves a piece of legislation that got passed in 2012.
Well, they wrote in conjunction with state lawmakers.
We came to learn after the fact was it was really industry representatives behind closed doors that wrote that legislation, essentially handed it off to Pennsylvania lawmakers who in 2012 passed it.
And also, this is bipartisan, too. The support for fracking.
Unfortunately, in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, really across America, it is both Republicans and Democrats that foolishly fall into the argument that fracking is somehow a bridge fuel and serves any beneficial purpose, when in fact it's devastating, it's not needed, it's not a bridge fuel. Clean energy is here today. But as you said, Act 13 had many devastating provisions. The example that I like to use is that amongst the things that Act 13 did was that it mandated that drilling and fracking be allowed to happen in every part of every community in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, including in the historic and environmental preservation areas, the agricultural districts, even in residential communities. By virtue of Act 13, communities had to allow operating drilling well pads within 300 feet of people's homes.
And there was no recourse?
What Act 13 did was take from local communities their zoning authority that would have allowed them to limit this highly industrial operation to the industrial zones of the communities. But Act 13 stripped that away.
So in short, the devastating effects were people who were getting sick, people who found wells that were contaminated. There was little recourse. And you, as the head of the Riverkeeper Network, Did you know that this Green Amendment was sitting there waiting to be used? Was it something you researched and you found and went, aha? I mean, how did you come about to the conclusion that you could use this?
So at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network and other communities, we're very aware of the fact that we had an environmental rights amendment in the Pennsylvania Constitution for decades. And I and others would go up and quote the beautiful language of the environmental rights amendment. The problem is that while the provision was passed in 1971, almost as soon as it was passed, people overreached in how they sought to use it. And so very quickly, the Pennsylvania Supreme Court actually passed decisions that, as the Chief Justice at the time characterized it, emasculated, disemboweled the Environmental Rights Amendment, declared it good public policy, but took from it the substantive legal effect. So it was great language on the books, but it didn't have the legal strength.
So what happened here? What changed?
When Act 13 was passed, we realized at the Delaware Riverkeeper Network that we might be in this moment in time when the industry and legislators in the industry's pocket had themselves so overreached that we had an opportunity to go back before the Pennsylvania Supreme Court and relitigate the issue of the Environmental Rights Amendment of Pennsylvania Constitution and get the Pennsylvania Supreme Court to see that that provision had been misinterpreted and misapplied, and for 42 years that the people of Pennsylvania had very literally been robbed of their right to a healthy environment.
And this was a conservative court.
It was a very conservative
court.
That found
in your favor.
Led by a very conservative Chief Justice. And the opinion that we secured was actually written by that conservative Chief Justice, Chief Justice Castile. He wrote the opinion with beautiful language and very literally breathed life into the Environmental Rights Amendment of Pennsylvania's Constitution, restored to the people of Pennsylvania their constitutional right to a healthy environment, and declared unconstitutional these devastating provisions in Act 13 that were making the harmful impacts of drilling and fracking that much worse, that much more prolific, that much more widespread. So, and that was just very recently, in December of 2013. Since that victory, we've been going forth and using now the Environmental Rights Amendment to try to really work to protect communities and identify through our advocacy and, when necessary, litigation, define what it really means to have a constitutional right to a healthy environment here in Pennsylvania.
So in Pennsylvania, what are some of the issues now in the front burner that you feel you can tackle with the Green Amendment behind you? And we've got about 30 seconds before the break.
There are so many of them. There's air pollution, there's water pollution, there's toxic contamination of landscapes that are threatening communities and their streams and water supplies. It's always in those situations where the government has overreached in allowing contamination by others or taking action that would advance contamination that overreaches into people's environmental rights that we're taking on.
Delaware Riverkeeper Maya Van Rossum is our guest this hour. She is the author of The Green Amendment, Securing Our Right to a Healthy Environment. And she's arguing we need state and federal constitutional amendments that would guarantee our right to a healthy environment across the board. Stay with us for more of Radio Times. Continues in just a moment on WHYY in Philadelphia. You're listening to Radio Times on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. Marty's got the day off today. Maya Van Rossum is in studio with us. She is the author of The Green Amendment, Securing Our Right to a Healthy Environment. She's also the Delaware Riverkeeper. And we went into the break talking about how the Green Amendment, Pennsylvania's Green Amendment, was used to help overturn some rather odious parts of Act 13, the oil and gas law in Pennsylvania. And so, Maya, the next step, you kind of took this particular victory and you started to look across the country. The only other state which has a Green Amendment in place is Montana. We could talk about Montana's story in a little bit on WHYY on Radio Times. But so what made you then start to look at the country as a whole?
So Chief Justice Castile, when he wrote his opinion, didn't just talk about the power and importance of Pennsylvania's Green Amendment and how it came to be and why it was so important. But amongst the things that Chief Justice Castile said in the plurality opinion that he wrote was he recognized that the right to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania wasn't given to the people of Pennsylvania by the constitutional provision. It was an inherent, indefeasible, inalienable right that the people of Pennsylvania, that all people already have, and that the constitutional provision merely recognized that right and gave it the highest level of protection under the law that you can get here in the United States of America, Bill of Rights recognition and protection. It was just such powerful language that it really did make me wonder, after 24 years of advocacy, you know, what was the situation in other states? And so I looked and was stunned to find that it's Pennsylvania and Montana.
So a huge challenge. I mean, you've got two states which have said okay to this. So in order to get other states to enact constitutional amendments and or green amendments and the federal government, I mean, when you consider really the fact that Congress moves pretty slowly on a number of issues, let's talk about this on the federal level. Do you expect to see anything like this seeing the light of day in Congress? And then you've got the Trump administration and Scott Pruitt at the head of the EPA. I can't see it going anywhere there either.
So I think that the current administration at the federal level is really making my case for me, how important it is to have a higher level of protection for our environment, a level of protection that can't be rolled back by one administration or another.
But so, you need support to have this enacted.
Absolutely. Yeah. But while the current administration really, as I said, is making the case for me, I don't think the national level is the place to start. I really believe that we have to start in the states. I think state constitutional amendments are more accessible, they're more understandable, procedurally they're better. And I think what will happen is as communities across the nation have this conversation about the power and importance of green amendments and work to get them, we'll start to have a national conversation that evolves and grows. And we'll have synergy with state after state after state pursuing these green amendments. And very quickly and very naturally, people will recognize on their own that state-level green amendments are not enough, that we do need a national green amendment, a federal green amendment, if we want to hold our out-of-control president and out-of-control Congress accountable for their attacks on the environment, whether it's this administration or some future administration. Another part of the hurdle, though, is not just the power of green amendments, but helping states that have language already in their constitutions about the environment understand why that language, as beautiful as it may sound, does not rise to the level of green amendment. There are many states.
Where's the line?
The key is, and we have on the forthegenerations.org website, a checklist for people. But there are some fundamentals that are critical. The Green Amendment has to be in the Bill of Rights section, the Declaration of Rights section of the Constitution, so that it's recognized as being inalienable. It should focus broadly on environmental protections, clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment. There are some states, for example, California, that has the right to fish in its Declaration of Rights. But as I say, if you are an angler that eats that fish, you know, how do you have a constitutional right if that fish is so toxic that it's not safe to eat, right? And that's not the same as having access to clean water, clean air, and a healthy environment. So it needs to be generational. There are some basics, and they're on this checklist that we have, as well as I have been working with communities that are interested across the nation to provide for them straw man language that they can advance in their states.
All right, the telephone number to call, 888-477-9499. We've got John on the line from Bordentown, New Jersey. Hi, John.
Hi, thank you very much for having me on.
No problem.
This is a great topic. I just have a question for Maya about the Green Amendments and possibly using them for a proposed toxic hazardous waste facility right in Bucks County, Pennsylvania. The facility is Elkhorn, which would be right next to the Delaware River. I'm actually from New Jersey, and apparently we do not have our own Green Amendments rights here. But I'm just curious if, A, you think this would be useful to try to halt a facility like this to be built right next to the river, and if there's any thoughts in working with Pennsylvania, working with New Jersey, since there's so much cross pollution that occurs among the river.
Good question, John. Thanks for the call.
Yeah, the Elkhorn facility is a major threat to the Delaware River and to both Pennsylvania and New Jersey communities, as well as downstream communities. The power of a green amendment, I love this question, because one of the most powerful things about a green amendment is we really can and should be using them to change decision-making on the front end, not wait till a bad decision or bad project goes through and challenge it after the fact in the courts, but use the constitutional obligation for government officials to protect the rights to a healthy environment before they make that bad decision. And so certainly in the case of the Elkhorn hazardous waste facility, using the Environmental Rights Amendment of Pennsylvania's Constitution to argue that government officials cannot and should not be approving this project in the first place is a perfect, beautiful use of the Green Amendment. I do want to say, since we've got this Green Amendment movement going, we do have some Green Amendment proposals in other states, and one of them is in New Jersey, John.
I was just going to say, we've got, you know, in New Jersey, a progressive governor, Democrat-led legislature. But New Jersey's been viewed in some fashion for a long time as a progressive-leaning state. Why is there no Green Amendment there up until now?
Every state's going to have its own story, right, as to why it doesn't have a Green Amendment yet. I think a large part of it is sort of where we began this whole conversation, is people believe that the environmental protection laws we have in place are protecting them from pollution and degradation. They don't realize that it's really just about pollution management, degradation management, not prevention. And so that's part of the movement, the Green Amendment movement, is having this conversation with communities, helping them to understand the failings of the current legal and political system so that they understand why pursuing a Green Amendment, as difficult as it will be in every state, why pursuing that is so fundamentally important.
Are you looking at Delaware, too, another Democratic governor? And I believe a Democrat legislature in Delaware.
So we're not limiting our focus to the Dems, right? Protecting the environment is an apolitical issue. In fact, some of our best political or our best environmental protection laws we have in place came under Republican administration.
Okay,
so we always need to honor that.
Yes.
And of course, it was a lot of Democrats who did and continue to profess the falsehoods about fracking being in any way, shape, or form a good source of energy.
As we mentioned at the top of the show.
At the top of the show.
And I also wanted to just jump in here for a moment, because we did talk about the Trump administration a few minutes ago. But in fact, too, the Obama administration was a full, threw its weight behind the development of natural gas resources.
The Obama administration, Hillary Clinton, in her bid for to become president, she too was a strong advocate of fracked shale gas and fracking across the board as being beneficial on the energy front.
And again, you say that natural gas is perceived to be a cleaner energy than coal, but it is not, because of the fracking process primarily, a clean energy, in your opinion?
Yeah, and in fact, it's not my opinion. It's all the science and all the research that's been done across the board. At this point, we have over 685 scientific reviews, peer reviews of the hazards of shale gas extraction with fracking and horizontal drilling. And what they show, for the most part, is that it's devastating to health and to the environment. So good science shows us that fracking's a bad idea. And any politician, whatever their political stripes, is wrong if they're on the fracking bandwagon.
So, but Maya, modern day energy consumption, of course, is enormous. And some would say, what choice do we have? I mean, our cleaner fuels, solar, wind, etc., up to speed to carry the enormous burden of energy production that we face today.
Clean energy options are absolutely available today, and what we should be doing is advancing clean energy technologies, moving away from dirty fossil fuels, whether it's fracked gas, fracked oil, coal, or otherwise. We need to be immediately transitioning to the clean energy options. And there again, the science shows us that clean energy options are absolutely available. In fact, the Delaware Riverkeeper Network put out a very clearly detailed roadmap plan for Pennsylvania legislators to show how policy changes, legal changes, and investments could help Pennsylvania, could make Pennsylvania totally supported by clean energy options by the year 2050 if the political will was there. Those kinds of plans exist for every state across the nation and for the United States of America as a whole. It's all about political will. It's not about availability.
As you advocate for the enactment of green amendments across the country, you know, you're going to face, obviously, you're going to face industry advocates who say, you know, overprotection, quote unquote, of the environment will hurt jobs and the economy.
So we don't overprotect the environment, and I don't really think you can overprotect the environment, right? Environmental protection is good public policy. It's good for the economy. It's good for job creation, and it's good for protecting people's lives, their very lives. I don't think there's any person, industry representative or otherwise, who would say it's okay for their mother, child, sister, father, friend to die so somebody else could have a job in any sector. And the fact of the matter is we don't need to be having that conversation, because whether you're talking about energy creation or development or any sort of commercial business, there is always a way to pursue it that protects the environment at the same time you accomplish the goal. And what we can see is when we protect the environment, we do in fact have healthier economies and have greater job creation. Just look at the energy field. There's so much evidence that for every $1 million invested in a clean energy option, a clean energy pathway versus dirty fossil fuels, you create 3 to 5 times the number of jobs, plus you create the energy you need, plus you avoid all of the environmental consequences, and the jobs that you're creating have better opportunities for people to come in at the ground level to learn the job and move up to the upper echelons of greater responsibility and pay.
And yet with this, the fossil fuel industry is not convinced.
It's not that the fossil fuel industry is not convinced. The fossil fuel industry, frankly, is totally committed to their dirty fossil fuels, right? But we're talking about what's right for our communities as a whole. How do we create energy for our communities as a whole? And the science and experience are very clear. Clean energy options are available. Dirty fossil fuels are devastating. And we need to get on the clean energy pathway, not just to protect present generations, but future generations who will be devastated by the ramifications of climate change if we don't have a dramatic change today, now.
All right, let's get to an email from Brendan, who is in Bucks County. Brendan asks, can the Environmental Rights Amendment, the Green Amendment in Pennsylvania, be used to force drillers to reveal what they are polluting our water with? Does the Constitution supersede their propriety status?
So it's some of these very specific questions. We're really testing the boundaries of what it means to have a green amendment. It isn't instantly clear in every context across the board. And, you know, we've only had legal life in Pennsylvania's green amendment because of our litigation since December of 2013. So some of these questions I can't answer absolutely. But what I can tell you is that we and the person asking that question can and should be going to their government officials at every turn, quoting Pennsylvania's Green Amendment and holding those government officials accountable for their legal obligation to respect, honor, and protect the rights of the people of Pennsylvania to pure water, clean air, and a healthy environment. We're testing the boundaries, it's becoming clear every year we get a little bit more experience and a little bit more advancement. We're getting some good decisions out of the courts, including the Supreme Court, to really support this better decision-making here
in Pennsylvania. It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress.
How did Pennsylvania end up with a green amendment? This was, what, back in the early 70s?
So what Pennsylvania had, which so many other states across the nation didn't have, was we had a gentleman named Franklin Curry. Franklin Curry got himself elected to the Pennsylvania legislature, he recognized that one of the reasons why Pennsylvania's environment was being allowed to be devastated, degraded to such a high degree, as was happening in other states across the nation, was because we weren't honoring and protecting the right to a healthy environment as an inalienable right and giving it that same highest level of protection that we do give to those other fundamental freedoms, like our right to free speech, freedom of religion, private property rights. So he recognized this. He advocated for this. He proposed a green amendment. And very quickly, that amendment got passed. In fact, it was passed unanimously in the House, in the Senate, and by a vote of 4-1 by the people of Pennsylvania.
There was an environmental movement happening across the country at that time. I bet you that helped.
There absolutely was. But I think I always think that we were so blessed to have Franklin Curry here in Pennsylvania because he really was the champion that gave voice to this need, to this movement here in Pennsylvania.
So in Montana, as we mentioned, that the other state the only other state in the nation which has a green amendment, the state constitution there helped to save the Blackfoot River. We've got about a minute going up to the break. Tell us that story.
So the Blackfoot River was threatened tremendously by gold mining, by another devastating process of leaching gold out of the geology of the earth.
And when that happens, how does that affect the river?
So the ramifications for a river system are very broad-reaching in terms of toxic effects as well as implications for the environment and just the whole quality of the river system itself. What Montana had was it had this green amendment in place, and it had a very committed group of individuals like we had here in Pennsylvania when it came to Act 13 who used the constitutional provision to challenge the major threat to the Blackfoot River and succeeded. We do have, from that movement in the 70s, as I said, we do have constitutional language in state constitutions across the nation. It's only Pennsylvania and Montana, though, that have these key elements like including the provision in the Declaration of Rights section, like making it generational, like recognizing it as an inalienable right that is self-executing, that people can rise up and defend in the courts as soon as they are infringed upon, not have to look to some other law that gives them access to the courts. These are fundamentally critical elements of a Green Amendment, and only Pennsylvania and Montana have them.
So in the 30 seconds we have before the break, where do you even start if somebody's listening to this and says, wow, this is a concept I can really agree with and I'd like to get involved? What do they do?
So there are a couple of things they can do. First off, if they're interested in learning the whole story, they can, of course, get the book, The Green Amendment. They can go to the website we've created for the generations, forthegenerations.org, and get a lot of the information that lays this out, the checklist and some critical tools. And frankly, they can call me and I will be happy to come to their community to talk with them about how to pursue and secure green amendments.
We're talking to Maya Van Rossum, the Delaware Riverkeeper and the author of The Green Amendment, Securing Our Right to a Healthy Environment. She's with us for the rest of the show. So keep it here, WHYY in Philadelphia, for more of Radio Times. This is WHYY in Philadelphia, and you're listening to Radio Times. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan. On tomorrow's show, we're going to be talking about affordable housing in Philadelphia, and we want to hear from you. How have home prices affected you and your family? Do you find the cost of owning or renting in Philadelphia to be a major burden on your pocketbook? And what do you see as a proper fix to the cost of living in the city? Tell us your story by calling our voicemail line, 267-405-2006. That's 267-405-2006. That number will be up on our social media as well. Or you can email us at radiotimes@whyy.org. We hope to hear from you for tomorrow's show. Today, we are talking to environmentalist Maya Van Rossum. She is the Delaware Riverkeeper and also author of The Green Amendment, Securing Our Right to a Healthy Environment. And continuing with this conversation, Maya, I read that just a half century ago, the Delaware River was so polluted that you could literally just get sick from inhaling the fumes coming off of the water. Tell us a little bit about that and then about the journey the Delaware has taken to where it is today, which is obviously much better.
So there was so much pollution in the Delaware River by the time you reach the 1940s, 50s timeframe that, yes, when dock workers would come down to the river, they could get sick. The river was so contaminated that for 20 miles, there was an oxygen dead zone. No oxygen in the river, top to bottom, bank to bank, in the Philadelphia-Camden reach of the river, largely from nutrient pollution coming out of people's toilets, right, coming out of their coming out of their homes. In the wake of that, as well as, you know, the environmental movement that was sweeping the nation, we had the passage of federal laws like the Clean Water Act. We had increased protections at the state level. Here in the Delaware River Basin, we have the Delaware River Basin Commission that was created in the 60s, who enhanced their protections. And there was a lot of activism, people fighting to clean up our beautiful Delaware River and rivers across the nation.
There used to be sturgeon in the river.
So the Delaware River actually used to be the sturgeon capital of the United States of America, the caviar capital of the United States of America. And that was really at the turn of the century, around the 1900s. But because of pollution, degradation, over-harvesting, devastation of the sturgeon's habitats, we have brought the sturgeon down to devastatingly low levels. In fact, while sturgeon across the nation are endangered, or in the case of two species threatened, the rest are all endangered, our Delaware River sturgeon are particularly in danger. We have a genetically unique population of Atlantic sturgeon that live nowhere else in the United States of America except in our beautiful Delaware River. And yet, we have at this point less than 300 spawning adults left. Less than 300. And week in and week out, I continue to have to battle against threats to the sturgeon directly, taking them directly or to their habitat, that continue to put Atlantic sturgeon individuals on the death block. With less than 300 spawning adults, we can't spare one. So despite, again, these environmental protection laws that we supposedly have in place that are supposed to do so much good, not only have they brought a species like our Delaware River Atlantic sturgeon to the brink of extinction, but they continue to legally allow the take of sturgeon at devastating levels.
So would green amendments on the New Jersey side, the New York side, the Delaware side, we've already got one obviously in place in Pennsylvania, would this help endangered species?
So that's one of the things that we would have to advocate for, right, is that as decisions are being made in states where there are green amendments, using our green amendment to inform the decision making on the front end, to make clear that the loss of that species rises to the level of a constitutional infringement. And part of that depends on the language that actually goes in the green amendment. A lot of what's happening to species is happening or not happening in terms of protections at the federal level. So that is one of those areas where I think a federal green amendment is vitally, vitally important.
And again, realistically, I mean, I know you're hopeful and you're working hard, but to get a green amendment baked into the Constitution at the federal level, do you really think that you know, considering the support by, you know, the bipartisan support of industries such as, you know, the fossil fuel industry, do you think that you will realistically see this, you know, over the next 10, 20 years, something like that?
I do. And I think what's happening is that communities across the nation are being devastated because of pollution and degradation. They're losing the health, the quality of their lives. They're losing family members. They're losing jobs, or jobs are going uncreated. There's devastating impacts from environmental degradation and pollution. And communities that are experiencing that realize and recognize that they do need something greater, and that a green amendment is, in fact, that something greater that they need. In fact, working with a community in East Whiteland, in Chester County, where there's a highly toxic site contaminated through industrial operations, I've been involved with them over the last few years, fighting to get that site cleaned up and getting the Department of Environmental Protection focused on cleanup rather than focused on development of that site, despite allowing the contaminated condition to be ongoing. Those communities were shocked and thrilled to learn about Pennsylvania's Green Amendment. And in fact, they use it every day now in their advocacy, and we are accomplishing tremendous success.
So how do you see the end of this story being written then, with the Green Amendment behind it?
In terms of the Bishop Tube site in East Whiteland Township, I see the Bishop Tube site being fully cleaned up and protected as natural open space, which is the goal of the community. And I believe with the power of the Green Amendment and the inspiration these communities are feeling and the strength they're feeling, that we can get there.
And now, New York State does not at this point have a Green Amendment in place. You do write, though, and this is really interesting in your book, New York City, of all places, offers the gold standard for watershed management programs. Tell us about that.
In fact, New York City has, if in taste tests nationwide, New York City is known to have the champagne of drinking water here in the United States of America.
Tap water.
And that is because they have invested up to about $1.5 billion in protecting the watershed that supplies drinking water to New York City. And as a result, their drinking water is provided to the city. It comes actually from the Delaware River, from the upper reaches of the Delaware River. They drink unfiltered water from the Delaware River system because New York City has invested so successfully and so heavily in protecting the natural lands that are the source of that drinking water. If New York City had not made that tremendous investment, both financial investment, regulatory investment, time, energy, policy investment in protecting the upper reaches of the watershed for that water supply, they would have had to spend as much as $20 billion on water treatment systems. So not only do we provide New York City with the best drinking water in the nation out of their tap, but we have protected the reaches of the upper Delaware River. We've created jobs. We've supported progressive, healthy agriculture. And we've saved the city up to $18 billion, right? So we created jobs, saved the environment, and benefited people all at once. That can be happen in every scenario.
Do you see cities downriver, Philadelphia, Trenton, taking a page from New York City's book?
So we do see the city of Philadelphia looking more and more to environmental protection in terms of protecting the quality of Philadelphia's water supply, both in the Delaware River system and in the Schuylkill River system, of course, major tributary to the Delaware. Amongst the threats to downstream drinking water supplies is the proposal by the Delaware River Basin Commission right now that would, yes, continue to ban fracking in the watershed, but would also allow the importation of toxic frack wastewater for treatment, storage, and disposal within the boundaries of our watershed, and would allow water withdrawals to be taken out of our watershed to support the fracking industry in other portions of Pennsylvania.
So let's roll that back a moment. When you talk about disposal, what do you mean disposal? What would be going into the river?
So that's part of what is yet to be seen. But what we know about toxic frack wastewater, frankly, from a report that came out of Donald Trump's EPA just within the past few weeks, even they recognize that that there is no good, safe way to deal with the toxic wastewater that comes from the fracking industry, whether you're talking about treatment through some sort of system, storage on the land. For the most part, the wastewater is so toxic that what the industry is doing is actually shipping it off to Ohio and Oklahoma to inject it deep into the geology of the earth in the hopes that they will never see it again. And as a result, are causing hundreds of earthquakes in communities in Ohio and Oklahoma. There really is no safe way to deal with this wastewater. It is highly toxic, including with radioactive materials. The science shows there's no safe way to deal with it. It is absolutely absurd for the Delaware River Basin Commission, which is run by the governors of the four watershed states and a representative for the president. There is no sound reason for them to be thinking about lifting the protections we currently have in place that keep this toxic water out.
What about pulling water out of the river? How much are we talking about again, and what is the negative effect in your view?
So at this point, in terms of fracking sites, it used to be that you would be talking about up to 5 million gallons of water to frack each site. Now we're talking about 10 million gallons of water per well plus, right? So we are talking about massive volumes of water because the industry, while at this point they've drilled on the order of 10,000 or so in Pennsylvania, they want to drill up to 100,000. And the industry really is looking to the Delaware River system as a source for their fresh water, for the fracking of these sites, and also as a place more close to home to dispose of their toxic water.
And again, pulling water does what to the river?
What pulling water does is it drains the water from the system, right? We actually work very hard here in the Delaware River watershed to protect the volume of water that soaks into the ground to prevent inappropriate, unnecessary, depletive withdrawals from the Delaware River system. Because when you draw too much water out of the river, out of groundwater, out of streams, and ultimately, therefore, out of the main Delaware River system, you are depleting drinking water supplies. You're depleting the water that's necessary for supporting the fish and the ecosystems that we have. It puts us into drought much more frequently, much more intensively. As climate change comes down upon us, those kinds of conditions are going to become excruciatingly and increasingly dangerous. So we need to not be giving our water away to an industry like the frackers. Just look at in California, where so much water is going to the frackers rather than to agriculture and the devastating effects it's having.
And how might Pennsylvania's Green Amendment help you in your effort to, you know, in your efforts to thwart these activities?
So a Green Amendment mandates a look at individual impacts, cumulative impacts, the use of good science in decision making. So we are absolutely making the case to the Delaware River Basin Commission, particularly the Pennsylvania Commissioner, that with a Green Amendment in place, the facts and the science are very clear. You cannot allow the importation of toxic frack wastewater, the exportation of water from our system, and honor your obligation to a Green Amendment. And I would like to say, using our beautiful Delaware River to advance drilling and fracking in other communities where it is having so many devastating impacts is absolutely immoral. And we are opposed to that here in the Delaware River Basin.
We've got an email from Phyllis, who's in Wynwood. Phyllis says, I'm supportive of green amendments, but I prefer that they were written to protect the ecosystem's right to exist undisturbed. The, quote, environment, end quote, sounds like a stage setting for our activities. But the reality is we are part of a complex ecosystem that we've only begun to understand. That might be a tough thing to bake into a constitution, the right for an ecosystem's right to exist undisturbed.
When I go and speak about the Green Amendment in communities, this concept of the rights of nature often comes up because for many people, they feel very passionately about this. And I understand that it shouldn't be all about the people, right? That nature itself has a right to exist.
So am I wrong in that? That's something that you see could end up in Green Amendments?
Well, it's going to depend on each state, right? One of the beauties of a Green Amendment movement is every state's going to decide what goes in their Green Amendment. What's being proposed for New York is vastly different from what is being proposed right now in the state of New Jersey, two states where we've been successful in getting a Green Amendment proposed and advancing. So what I say is if you live in a state where there's going to be a Green Amendment advancement and you think that you can get a rights of nature concept embodied in that Green Amendment past your state approval process, you know, more power to you. And I have, in fact, for a community in Oregon, who's very interested in this concept, I have actually written a straw man Green Amendment that does include a rights of nature concept.
You are a busy person, Maya Van Rossum. you seem to be so passionate about your work. How did you end up here, and how did you end up apparently falling in love with the Delaware River watershed?
So I first do want to begin by saying I really believe in the Green Amendment movement. I believe it is the path that we have to be on to protect our environment for present and future generations, and for the sake of the environment itself, all of the ecology, as the previous person noted. I grew up in the Delaware River watershed. I grew up in very literally playing in Ithan Creek in Radnor Township, Pennsylvania, and developed a very close connection with nature. My parents were wonderful people. They were not advocates or activists. They were not environmentalists per se. They just lived a good life, and they believed that you needed to honor nature as much as you honored your friends, neighbors, and communities.
And it took you a while as a child to get into that, right?
Absolutely. Like any child, right?
Yes. What's my mom saying?
That's right. But I had a wonderful mother and father. And that taught me to live what I believe. And I had a wonderful Ithan Creek to grow up in and enjoy. And then sadly, I had to watch my beautiful Ithan Creek and the forest that I played in as a child be decimated for a highway. And so, you know, and through all of that, through my whole life just realized and learned that nature does not have a voice in our human world unless we give it a voice. And so that's what I try to do every day.
Maya Van Rossum, it was a pleasure to have you join us once again for Radio Times. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Maya Van Rossum is Delaware Riverkeeper and author of The Green Amendment, Securing Our Right to a Healthy Environment. Don't forget, if you get a chance, connect with us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. We've also got some terrific podcasts to check out. Simply head to whyy.org/radiotimes. Our engineer today has been Diana Martinez. Our producers are Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Alex Stern. Thanks so much for joining us for Radio Times.